This podcast features three supposed adults who definitely use adult language. They're also supposedly writers who are definitely not procrastinating by making this podcast. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to No Bad Ideas, the storytelling game show where we take the worst ideas from the internet and try to turn them into stories that are actually good.
My name is Gabriel Urbina, and I am your first Bad Ideas host.
My name is Sarah Shackett. I'm your second Bad Ideas host.
And my name is Zach Valenti, your third Bad Ideas host.
And today we are joined remotely here in the Bad Ideas cave by one of our favorite people in all of podcasting, actually. He is the executive producer of Radio Drama Revival and a content creator at Khan Academy. It's Mr. David Reinstrom.
Hello, everybody.
The crowd goes wild.
Hi, David.
How are you doing?
Decently. All things considered, it's a seasonally adjusted okay.
Nice.
I'm feeling safe and secure. And my wife and I have our dog to take care of.
Aww.
And I'm, you know, involved with mutual aid in my neighborhood, which kind of makes me feel a little bit less impotent. It gives
always
me
good.
Somewhere to focus the rage.
That's great. That's great. Always good to have that rage outlet.
And it's also good to have a creative outlet, which is why I'm so delighted to join you on this show today. It's been great to work on RDR. I'm very excited to join you here as well.
And yeah, before we dive in, do you want to take a second to just tell folks at home, what is RDR?
Sure. So Radio Drama Revival, which I hosted for 5 years, we just went on our first ever season break hiatus, and I've turned
My
over
God.
The, I know, it was nuts. I've handed over the hosting duties to the extremely capable Elena Fernandez-Collins.
Another one of our favorite people in podcasting.
A very fine person. The show is dedicated to showcasing the diversity and vitality of modern audio fiction. And all three of you have been on the show, which
we
is
have.
Great. I see that as a badge of honor for me. And that's what we do. We feature new works, and sometimes people come on and we talk about old works, like Gabrielle and I did about the thing on the Forble board.
That's right.
A couple years ago. And we talk about this wonderful medium that we're all enmeshed in.
Brilliant. Brilliant. If you have not yet checked out Radio Drama Revival and you enjoy audio fiction, it is absolutely something that like you need to do to yourself. Just like go check it out. There are, at this point, I want to say hundreds of episodes, David.
Yeah. Oh, yes. There are the show has been around for 13 years. I was the
My
second
God.
Host. So you can find your new favorite show there. You can hear all sorts of interviews with fascinating people. It was the privilege of my career to be the host of that show. And I'm so excited to move into a new phase as its executive producer alongside Fred, our old host.
Yes. Be kind. Do this unto yourself. Check out Radio Drama Revival. But first,
yes,
listen to this episode of No Bad Ideas.
Something that would never be featured on Radio Drama Revival.
That's right. This is No Bad Ideas.
You don't know. This thing might bear fruit. We don't know. It might have legs.
We'll see.
We'll see.
All right.
This is the show where we find articles or posts or any kind of literature commemorating some of the worst ideas that humanity has ever had, some of the most short-sighted things we've ever done, some of the least well-thought-out concepts that we've tried to put into action. We bring them all here, we share them with each other, we horrify one another, and then we pick up our jaws off the ground, and we try to turn them into good stories in just 10 minutes. Are you guys excited to try to pan for gold in the river of human foolishness?
Let's find some nuggets, man.
The river of human foolishness is a great name for something.
I'm gonna jump into our first bad idea this week. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
I was born ready.
As ready as I'll be. I just hear McGucket's voice from the
Gravity Falls.
Gravity Falls show, just as like a generic cartoon gold digger.
Nice.
Let's go placer mining.
Exactly.
Keep that voice firm in your head as we go through our first article from the Huffington Post. And dear listeners, there will be links to all the articles in the episode description if you would like to read along as we go through these terrible ideas. But the first one, the headline reads, two men rob convenience store wearing watermelon rind disguises.
Oh my God.
Wow.
The article reads,
wow.
As disguises go, these were pretty seedy.
Oh, Jesus.
Very yes. good.
Everybody involved in this story, start. Including the writers, have too much time.
Strong start.
Police in Louisa, Virginia took to social media on Saturday in hopes of finding two men accused of robbing a convenience store on May 6th with watermelon rinds on their heads. Surveillance cameras at a Sheetz store caught the scofflaws in the act, but they managed to elude authorities thanks to their quote-unquote brilliant disguises, according to the New York Post. That is until Sunday, when authorities arrested 20-year-old Justin Rogers in connection with what the Post called the melodrama.
Oh, the New York Post is great.
Really, Rogers. I feel like they should have been arrested on charges of melony assault, but that's just me.
See, we're clearly improving upon this already. Rogers was booked on three charges, according to TMZ. Misdemeanor larceny of alcohol, misdemeanor possession of alcohol by an underage person, and felony prohibition of wearing a mask slash face covering in public. Police are still on the lookout for a second person, according to the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Candace Went, a customer at the convenience store where the robbery took place, thought the disguises fell in that thin line between stupid and clever. Quote, I think it's ridiculous. Innovative, but ridiculous, Went told WRIC-TV. The amount of work that you have to do to actually hollow out a watermelon to stick it on your head, I think it's kind of crazy. So that's the article. I'm going to very quickly just throw the link in the chat so that you guys can see
the tremendous
visual aid of what this robbery looks like. And if you're at home listening, dear listeners, I really recommend hitting the link.
Oh, merciful heaven. That looks so, they look like, I think what I was kind of expecting, Gabriel, when you were reading this, was
oh my
that
God.
It was gonna be sort of like, I think there's probably a meme of like a cat with like a hollowed out, like half watermelon on its head.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was kind of imagining like space carved out for the eyes and like a Norman style nose guard. But this is just like they're aliens, like someone cut eye holes in a whole ass watermelon that just fits over the heads of these two dudes.
That's right.
Also, shame on them for robbing a Sheetz, the best convenience store.
Sheetz are great.
They punch up their weight.
I'm starting the timer. 10 minutes on the clock. How do we turn this into a good idea?
All right. So I think that one idea, and this idea is called Loot Salad. This is about like a gang of criminals that dress as different fruits in order to disappear into the background when they accomplish their heists, their maneuvers. They decide that that's their thing. Mm-hmm. Or they stick with one and they're the Cherry Hill Gang.
Oh, yay. Very nice.
Thanks.
This is actually making me think there was a story going around on Twitter a couple days ago about like, and it was a good idea. It was a very heartwarming story about how there was this boy in a town who got bullied because like his sort of favorite comfort outfit was a banana suit. And they had a reporter come interview him, and the reporter chose to wear a grape suit to interview him. And so like now I'm just imagining a town where everyone has access to fruit clothing. And of course, the watermelon heads are like the seedy teens who hang out at the skate park and occasionally rob convenience stores for liquor. But there's like a whole, there's a whole world of possibilities of fruit-based activities that we could engage in here.
Coming this summer, fruit up.
That's good. That's really good.
It's good.
I think I have a line in on how we could make this film, if it's going to be a film, because I have a tie-in product that will be our sponsor.
Okay,
and the film
is
called Fruitopia because it's sponsored by the 90s fruit drink brand Fruitopia. And so we depict the society that Sarah describes, where everyone is either anthropomorphic fruit or dresses like their favorite fruit.
Right.
How do we feel? How do we feel about this idea? How do we feel? How do we feel about like sponsorship tie-ins on NBA?
I'm all for that merchandising money.
All right.
Yeah, no, bring it on.
The kids
bring
love the flamethrower. That's all I'm saying.
The only reason why we have not sold out is people have not made an offer yet.
Let's
the only thing standing in the way of us selling out.
Give us money to make a dumb smoothie heist movie. What if there were a, you know how like the United States has a strategic oil reserve, it has a strategic like milk reserve.
It has a strategic cheese reserve too.
Yeah. What if there was a strategic frozen fruit reserve?
Ooh. Mm. And there's a heist that takes place within the frozen fruit reserve. I love it.
Yeah. Like you've heard of Fort Knox.
The deep state is hoarding all the frozen raspberries.
They're hoarding all the frozen raspberries.
Bastards.
Okay. I want to bring us, I want to maybe not like bring the plane in for a landing, but lower the elevation just a little bit. I've heard kind of two options. One is full anthropomorphic fruit society. The other one is kind of in a very bizarrely colorful Black Mirror-esque episode. It's a world where, or at least a town or a village or a city where everyone is dressed up or wearing masks of fruit. I would perhaps lean towards the second one just because then that is more or less the conceit is right there and you don't have to kind of come up with, okay, aside from the fact that everyone is a fruit, what is the plot of the movie in the anthropomorphic one?
So is it like a religious thing? Is it like a folk horror Wicker Man Midsommar thing? Like are they, do they worship like a fruit deity? Yeah.
Or it could be a like kind of like a giver situation where there is sort of a caste system.
And into this community the starfruit child is born.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, tell me more.
All right, so there's a starfruit kid, and they have a special starfruit destiny.
And they do they become friends with the durian kid, even though they're not supposed to?
Oh, 100%. Everyone keeps well away from the durian kid, but starfruit recognizes the durian child's essential sweetness.
My God. Great. I love it so far.
But the watermelon goons are out to get them.
Mm-hmm.
The watermelons would be bros. That's fair.
Sure.
Give me a little bit of an age range. Is this happening when they're small children? Is this happening when they're teenagers, adults?
I think they're tweens.
Children. Yeah.
Yeah. I think they're like between 11 and 14. Does that feel
that nice
right to you, Sarah?
Spot. Yeah.
I was gonna say I'm the upside down.
Stranger Things
age, like that age range.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
I think so. That feels right to me.
Yeah, maybe slightly younger, but in there, right in there.
Cool. So they have been born, they've been raised. The societal decider has judged them to each be what they are.
I guess maybe when you turn like 11, you get assigned a fruit.
There we go.
The coming of.
And so this is like the first starfruit kid in like 75 years.
Yeah. And maybe these are two kids that have been friends a very long time.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden it's no. You cannot have any interactions with them whatsoever.
Is there a divide between fruit and vegetable people?
Oh, I like that.
We don't talk about the vegetable people.
That's a different town.
Yeah.
Right.
We've always been at war with the vegetable people.
You get Legumia? Exiled if you're a vegetable person.
Is
tomato family's confused.
Oh no, they're tomato family has divided loyalties. It's like Northern Ireland. Is the starfruit child sort of like treated like the Dalai Lama? Like, are they kind of removed from their society and treated like a princeling and not allowed to like see the other children? And it's about like the secret friendship between starfruit and durian, or not that?
So I like the idea of the Dalai Lama, but like in the world ruled by the broccoli family.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. The starfruit child.
Albert Broccoli, the producer of all the
which one?
The Bond films.
Hey. Oh. No.
Albert Broccoli.
Oh my gosh.
Absolutely. Or Barbara Broccoli? I feel like it was Albert and Barbara Broccoli.
I feel like those, and for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, these are actual real people who made the James Bond movies.
Yes. Huh. I did not know.
Yeah. Eat your broccoli.
I guess the idea of like how the Panchen Lama, like in real life, was abducted at a young age by the Communist Party of China. I just like, I'm thinking that like the starfruit child is born. We must hide him from the broccoli overlords.
Ooh.
Lest he be disappeared and replaced with a broccoli starfruit impersonator.
A pretender to the starfruit throne.
So maybe that's it. Like, you don't get assigned your role at 11. You get them assigned at birth.
Okay.
But this child has been raised believing that he's one of the durian kids. And all of a sudden, he somehow discovers, oh, no, you have a higher calling.
Or to turn it around, like, if we want to sort of add in that element of food group conflict, there's a child, the starfruit child, who has been raised to rule and, you know, sort of the lap of privilege. Suddenly the Fire Nation attacks.
Right.
And they're
terrible broccoli clan demands five a day.
Right. And so the starfruit child escapes and sort of into the outskirts of the town or the forest or wherever, and befriends the durian kid.
Sure. And it is what he learns among the durian family that gives him the like strength and fortitude to overthrow the broccolis once and for all and restore peace, justice, and equality to the land.
With the help of the Watermelon Warriors.
With the help of the Watermelon Warriors.
Right.
So this is now like a full-on kind of like Last Airbender slash Divergent
like Last Airbender
kind of
meets
dystopian.
Willow meets Food Fight, the disastrous
direct. That's right. Could even be animated in the same
CGI.
Style. No, let's not do that.
What does it build to? Like, what is kind of like the big final confrontation? Is it a battle? Is it kind of a appeal to the masses to throw off the shackles and take off their masks?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, we're all the same underneath. We're all ultimately dietary fiber.
That's right.
Guys, we're all just cellulose and water, please.
Okay, so big,
we have
so big,
more
big
that unites us than divides us.
Big dramatic appeal to the masses, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Starfruit Child has to melt the heart of the.
All right, they are like melted. You have 12 seconds. What is it called?
Oh, man, what's the official name for Starfruit?
Produce Nation.
Produce Nation, it is, because that is time.
Carambola.
Sorry, that
the
is
Legend of Carambola.
Legend of Carambola.
That's pretty good. It's got a good ring.
Thanks.
There we go.
All right, applause, everyone, because that went, that flew. That
sure
went
did.
Far, far from what I thought it would be and from what the original story was. So nicely done, everybody. Nicely done.
Call us Breville. We're ready to sell out.
We're going to go wait by the phone to see if it rings, but we'll be right back with another bad idea after we're done with that.
Hello, everybody. Zach Valenti breaking into this episode real quick with this brief message. It is a wild time in the world. And one thing that's keeping us sane here at No Bad Ideas HQ is making no bad ideas for you. From the practicalities of remembering what day it is because we have to schedule recording sessions, to the tactical mental health benefits of social interaction with good friends. And another thing that makes a huge difference for us making no bad ideas is your support on Patreon. If listening to this show is making a difference for you and you're in a position to give, we'd really appreciate it if you'd go to nobadideaspodcast.com/support. If you already contribute to our Patreon, thank you. It helps us keep the lights on and cover some of our overhead costs associated with making this show. Once more, you can find our Patreon to sign up at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. All right, now back to No Bad Ideas.
Welcome back to No Bad Ideas with our dear friend, David Reinstrom.
Hello.
This is unintentional, but I'm so delighted that it's happening for your episode because it is my turn to provide a bad idea. Yes. And it's also food related.
Oh my God, so great.
I love how that works out.
Accidental theme episodes are the best episodes of No Bad Ideas.
Oh yeah, I guess I should have said, Gabrielle, up at the top. Like, I've been doing these events every so often for my friend Elizabeth's company called Cuisine a la Quarantine.
Ooh.
I don't know when the next one's going to be, but it's like a version of the old thing that Lynn Rosetto Casper used to do when she was the host of Splendid Table, where you give me 5 ingredients and I help you come up with a meal.
Ah, yeah.
It's like a game show. Anyway, if you follow me on Twitter, I'll announce the next one of those. But
and you should sorry, definitely Sarah. Follow
you
David
should
on Twitter.
Definitely follow David on Twitter.
Thank you.
But yes,
your idea. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you.
Oh, no, not at all. This comes from Reddit's r/relationships.
Oh, dear.
I'm so excited.
I'm afraid.
Both reactions, very valid. I'm going to hold back on the title of the post because it gives the game away. But this is fun. I hope you all will enjoy it.
I know it's not the beans one because you already did the haunted beans one.
It's not the beans one.
Cool.
But here it is. So the poster writes, I know this sounds really weird, but here it is. Mm-hmm. My boyfriend and I have been together for 3 years. We met and started dating when we were both in graduate school. But I dropped out to go back to college to pursue a different career. We're both finished now and live together and make a fairly nice combined income.
Okay.
Our income is relevant because we could afford to eat somewhere nice when we're out and about, but he always wants breakfast food. When he was a child, his dad couldn't stand eating breakfast type food in the afternoon or evenings, so his mom would make him waffles, pancakes, eggs, and bacon in the evening whenever his dad was busy or out of town. It's a
wow.
wonderful and safe memory for him, and when he goes to his happy place, he says that that's where he always goes.
What a like strange low-stakes thriller that was this kid's childhood. But continue.
So my boyfriend is incredibly nice and caring person. He's emotionally tuned in to everyone and recognizes issues arising a long time before they occur. He loves animals and is kind and gentle with every bug, bird, and pet that he comes across. He almost is always willing to turn the other cheek in social situations when someone tries to insult him or gets aggressive towards him, and usually winds up diffusing the situation and having a productive discussion about whatever the issue was. Except at Waffle House.
Oh, no.
Thank you.
Uh-oh.
Anytime we're out.
Waffle House is validated.
Anytime we're out, he wants to go to the same goddamn Waffle House and get breakfast food. I'm not a big eater, so I used to not really care. I would just drink coffee and read my book while he enjoyed his food, but it became impossible once he and this one cook started chirping at each other every time we were there. Boyfriend complained about his eggs one time because he likes them a little runny and they were served hard. The cook responded by giving him scrambled eggs. When he brought it up again, the cook served him 2 hard-boiled eggs. I think it was just part of the cook's shtick, and it was kind of funny, to be honest, but my boyfriend wasn't able to laugh it off. When we left, he was in a bad mood and we didn't really talk about it. The next week, we were out getting some shopping done, and he wanted wanted to go to Waffle House again. I suggest that we try a different place.
A different one. There's a ton of them.
A different Waffle House location. Oh, no. But he only wanted the same Waffle House. We went in and sat down. And once again, the same cook served his eggs wrong. My boyfriend sort of snapped at him that he wasn't interested in messing around. Just wanted the correct eggs. The cook then served him a piece of toast with a hole cut out in the middle with a fried egg in it.
My boyfriend
got really mad and threw the egg and toast at the cook, which made the cook come around from behind the bar and throw it back at him.
Oh my God.
They ended up sort of wrestling slash fighting until my boyfriend was like, this is bullshit, and walked out. Nobody got hurt, but a few other people in there were watching and laughing. This is the crazy part. This is the crazy part. My boyfriend keeps going back and ordering eggs and getting into fistfights with the same cook. It's almost a ritual at this point. My boyfriend orders runny eggs. The cook serves him some other version of eggs, and then they beat the shit out of each other.
Yep.
I quit going with him after the second fight, but he kept going by himself. They're like Peter and the giant chicken from Family Guy. It's the weirdest thing.
Oh my God.
They physically fought like 6 or 7 times over this.
Oh my God. I got it. Okay, great.
I've tried to talk to him about it a few times, but he keeps saying it's a matter of principle. I've told him to talk to the manager or something like that, but he just waves me off. Apparently, the cook hasn't yet made him the correct runny egg. But it's like he spends the week learning new ways of preparing eggs to piss my boyfriend.
Oh my God. Cut to the boyfriend and the cook getting married instead.
I mean, they have to. They have to get together.
Perfect story.
No, that is absolutely the only way that this goes. Like I was about to say, like, this is very clearly these two people working out their belligerent sexual tension.
Here's the last turn. Yeah. The thing is, we're getting married this summer.
No, you're not.
Yeah!
He's accepted a job in a new city.
That's
a lie.
It'll
be easy for me to find work after the wedding, so we'll be moving away from his sworn enemy Waffle House guy. He hasn't really been out since quarantine started, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's the first place he goes when restaurants open back up for sitting customers. My main worry is this strange, vindictive side of him I've never seen before that leads him to fight the same guy every week.
You maybe have a couple of other things that you should be worried about.
Yeah, like how you're the act one girlfriend in a romantic comedy.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel so bad for this poster.
No, I
Sarah,
feel
I
awful.
Thought this was gonna be the I thought this was gonna be the freshly cracked black pepper poster.
Oh no, although I thought about that one.
Because that one's
that
also
one's great.
A very strange idiosyncrasy. For those of you unfamiliar with that one, that's about the woman whose boyfriend just puts insane amounts of freshly ground black pepper on everything.
Wow.
Just in every single
everything.
Food.
Hold on. Sarah, what was the title?
Oh,
yes.
Forgive me. The title of the post was, my boyfriend keeps getting into fights with a cook at Waffle House.
Art.
Oh my God.
So I have a title for this, but I feel like I should sit on it until the end.
Sure.
I am starting
it's
the clock.
Never too
so
late
you can
for
just
a great
roll.
Title.
Okay. I think this is a romantic comedy called Egged On, right? Because it's all about this like escalating war of dishes between the patron and the short order cook.
Oh my gosh.
And I feel like it should almost be told in like a from a place of disbelief by like the girlfriend. I don't know who's the protagonist, cuz In the Reddit relationships version of this story, where all four of us imagine that like the subtext of this is that this woman's boyfriend is in love with the short order cook. Like that's a tragedy. I feel bad for OP.
And
do we wanna
And my sort of twist on it would be that it is still told from the girlfriend of the man that keeps getting into these fights with this cook. But it's actually kind of a story about the two of them learning that they still love one another and they still care for each other, even if very clearly they are not the person that the other one is meant to be. Like, even if, like, at some point it just becomes very clear that, like, this egg cook at Waffle House is actually the person that the boyfriend is supposed to be with. But that doesn't mean that they don't care for one another. That doesn't mean that they don't love one another. And it's about them being kind of like mutually supportive and mutually loving as they go through this process of discovery. And that doesn't mean that it isn't hard, and that doesn't mean that it isn't really, really sad on some level. But like, it isn't necessarily just like a straight tragedy.
Sure.
So we're not doing the comedy where there's just like a war of escalating egg dishes then?
Oh no, it's like, I mean, that's definitely also happening. Don't worry. Like, that's also in there.
Good. 100%. That's all I want.
I think that we need to take the egg stuff to just like a place of just extraordinary, like, haute cuisine parody levels.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it starts with him just being like, oh, I'm sorry, did you want eggs over hard? No.
Did you want eggs
over easy? And then it sort of turns into those like Japanese cloud eggs where you separate the yolk and beat the mm-hmm. white until it's frothy, and then it turns into a little floof, like a little souffled egg.
The Waffle House cook is actually like a guy who burned out of high cuisine.
Oh yeah.
And you know, hasn't had the courage to go back, but like, these dishes that he makes are so incredible that eventually the boyfriend encourages him to sort of get back into the game.
What if the resolution is that the three of them start a restaurant, and that the girlfriend character is like the
front
the
of house
pole, is front of house, or but yeah, like in the like polarized triad of the three, is like the person that keeps everyone productive and like mm-hmm. prevents the mm-hmm. boys from like arguing until they make out like 8 hours a day.
Right.
Right.
Like, is the person that can best harness their creative energies. Like, boyfriend is the GM, the short order cook is the chef, and then she's like, well, I guess she would be the general manager. I don't know.
There's no GM. There's,
yeah.
To just go back to the escalating set piece of the egg dishes. Mm-hmm. Sure. At a certain point, after a couple of really, really out there ones, he goes in, orders his eggs, gets a plate that is just like, you know, catfish or something. And he's just like, where are my eggs? And the cook just kind of looks at him and is like, find out. And it's just like him like gingerly poking at this thing, being like, where are the eggs in this? I don't know what's happening.
Well, so
are the eggs inside the catfish? Is it sort of like a deep fried catfish?
It is somehow.
It's like exactly the thing that he wanted. And
right,
that's
but just
the
hidden.
Way that it's
yeah,
hidden.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's hidden the way that the I love you is hidden inside of that dish. Like, that's how mm-hmm. that's the first like intimation, or that, I think that's like the climax, right? That's how he decides. That's how he discovers that
he does care after all.
There's a ring inside the eggs inside
there's
the catfish.
There's a ring inside the eggs inside the catfish.
Here's a question. Just because I'm imagining the like escalating egg dish fight brawl into love affair being like a pretty quick, like, unless you really wanted to drag it out to 90 minutes, like mm-hmm. you could get that done in the first act. So what if the second act is the like bewildered ex-girlfriend trying to win him back with more eggscapades? And it's like, has your marriage curdle, or I don't know what's the congealed
I mean, eggs form curds when you
that's true.
I mean, call that a curd when you're making scrambled egg. I don't know, I kind of want to chart a different path for the woman. I don't think this guy is worth it for her.
That makes sense. Objectively,
like dump the egg guy. I'm sure he's great, but you know, maybe don't date someone who gets into slap, slap, kiss, kiss,
yeah, fights at Waffle House.
Yeah, like that's I think the big takeaway of kind of, it's not that he's a bad guy. It's just that like, this is very clearly not the person that you're supposed to be with.
Right.
And that doesn't mean that they can't also be a huge, important, loving part of your life. But like, there's very clearly something that he's working out, and he does not need to work it out with you.
Right.
So I wonder if the boyfriend and the short order cook is like the B plot to a larger story that is still about this like
about this,
OP
this,
protagonist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This woman who's juggling all of these things and has maybe made a bunch of sacrifices for her boyfriend.
Right.
Putting sort of her own kind of aspirations on hold a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And when he starts to get a little weird, it sort of frees her up to be like, well, what do I really want? Like, what do I want to do? And, you know, how can I sort of engineer my life so I'm not just serving other people? but doing something I care about. And then ironically, she ends up running a restaurant that serves other people.
Right.
But doing so in a way that serves her ambitions and not the ambitions of the people around her, because she realizes that she can harness the like renegade egg sex energy of the two dudes that
seem
to dominate all the conversations in her life in order to benefit not just herself, but her friends and her community.
Right.
Absolutely.
But I also really love the idea of like a montage, like maybe 40 minutes into the film, of like the escalation of the boyfriend continually arriving in the same spot at the counter at Waffle House. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, behind the divider in the, you know, in the galley, the chef is like just getting more and more elaborate and like digging out all of his old like molecular gastronomy tools and using a Paco jet.
Right, sous vide.
Like putting microgreens on like a little plate with tweezers.
Nothing that you would find at a Waffle House. He's bringing all of this in by himself.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing about Waffle House, going back to the pandemic element of the post, is that Waffle Houses are basically like canaries in the coal mine of natural disasters.
Yeah, there's a Waffle House indicator.
Yeah, the Waffle House indicator.
Yeah.
Sir, do you want to tell
the listeners
what that is? Yeah.
It's basically a sign of sort of how much infrastructure is in a community, because if a Waffle House is closed, that means things are fucked.
Really?
If Waffle House is open, then, you know, there's stuff going on.
Uh-huh.
Waffle Houses have like, I don't know if you saw, there was a piece in Texas Monthly, maybe back in March, about how the Texas grocery chain HEB has an emergency preparedness management position.
That is the other thing.
Because something that like grocery stores need to be good at, especially in Texas, especially in the Gulf Coast, is like dealing with the impact of hurricane season
and
being able to So not just standard logistics, but emergency logistics. And so like Waffle House is really good at this also. And they're really good at serving as like staging areas for emergency workers during crises.
For first responders, absolutely. And so Waffle Houses are kind of like the first things that come back online in those kinds of disasters. Anyway, you have a minute left. What do you want to do with this?
Well, I mean, I think that the big thing that we still need to figure out is kind of what is the A plot, kind of what is the woman doing as she kind of goes on this, you know, journey of discovery about what she wants to do with her life. Is it going back to college? Is it sort of like taking like going on like long nature hikes? Kind of like what does it physically look like?
I mean, it sounds like somebody's got to step up and make the Waffle House work. The good of the community.
I feel like in movies like this, it feels like the protagonist has like a highly remunerative but soul-sucking job, you know, like some sort of classic romantic comedy, white-collar employment.
I mean, if
like as an architect or an attorney or
going to keep with the pandemic theme, we could borrow from what is it, Up in the Air, the George Clooney
my
job is to lay people off job.
Oh, sure. She's like a business consultant.
Right. So she's
so she's a consultant. There we go.
She's a consultant. She's got a really unsatisfying consulting job, but she has a lot of money. And so,
and just to kind of like unpack that, it's not just that it's a consulting job, but that it's kind of like a consulting that makes corporations do like the heartless things that
she
don't
want to
do, right, Zach?
Yeah, Axeman. I mean, we could replace it with like the person who helps you pollute smarter.
But what you mean pollute more profitable, not pollute greener, right?
Well, I mean, what's the point of polluting if it doesn't
polluting
make you money?
Better for the 21st century.
Gotcha. Oh my God, Sarah, what a wild story.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you for bringing that to
Thank you guys for turning it into something way more heartfelt and substantive than this post at all deserves.
Man.
Oh, I hope everyone in this story ends up all right.
Yeah. Seriously.
What if they all get married? What if it's a throuple?
That would be amazing.
That was the other thought I would have. And I was trying to think of, it's Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it could be that situation going on.
Sure.
The problem is that like it feels like there is absolutely no connection between her and the cook so far.
Yeah. Right.
Well, that's because nobody asked her what she wanted. How does she like her eggs?
She doesn't. She just likes
she doesn't.
The coffee.
Like, that's the thing. She
says she just likes the coffee.
She's just there for the coffee and waffles.
She doesn't like breakfast food.
Oh, okay, right.
Maybe that's just a screen, though. She's going to get vulnerable, Gabrielle.
Yeah. How I learned to stop worrying and love the omelet.
Let's all think about how we could all be more vulnerable as we sign off from this episode of No Bad Ideas. But we'll be back on Thursday for more shenanigans with Mr. David Reinstrom.
It has been an honor.
This has been No Bad Ideas, produced by Gabrielle Urbina, Sarah Shackett, and Zach Valenti. Many thanks to our patrons for their partnership in making this show happen. And a special shout out to our Idealist members, Rena Sarame and Jennifer Schneider. Today's episode features music by State Shirt and Jazar from freemusicarchive.org. You can support the show at nobadideaspodcast.com/support. And if you love this show, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Thanks.